On today's podcast, we hear how a Mahler's love is a force like no other. Sadie, who lost her precious son Tony to an addiction, speaks from her heart, describing how, through her unspeakable grief and pain, was determined to help all her families facing addiction. Sadie is the founder of Hurt Have Your Tomorrows, which has saved countless lives since it began in 2001. Sadie, welcome to Memory of Me podcast. How are you?
I'm grand. Thank you very much, Bruna.
Alright. Sadie is the founder of the Hurt. Is it the Hurt Project or Hurt?
No, it's actually Hurt Have Your Tomorrows.
Okay.
And it's we are a voluntary organisation,
mm-hmm.
and we work with people with addiction.
Yeah.
Addiction such as alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
And anybody who's suicidal.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Yeah. And that was established back in 2001, wasn't it? After the loss of your son, Tony.
It's correct. It was established after Tony died.
Yeah.
Tony died on the 19th of October, mm-hmm. 2001.
Yeah. Aye. So it's been around over 20 years then?
I think 20, coming up now to 22 years.
Yeah.
Which I never ever thought would happen. Like,
yeah.
You know, because whenever I started it up, I thought it was only going to be a wee phone in, telephone.
Yeah.
To help parents, like myself.
Aye.
Whenever Tony died. But it has grown and grown, and I'm just amazed myself sometimes when I think back.
Aye.
You know, about how many people have come through our doors, how many people that we've sort of helped, and how many people we have saved.
Really, aye.
You know.
No, brilliant. And you know what? I'm actually really looking forward to kind of getting to the background of it all once we kind of chat about it.
Aye.
So just give us a wee background of just your life, just, you know, just who you are and just a wee bit about Tony himself in his early years.
Right. So my married name is Kyle. My own name is O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of known by O'Reilly within the organisation.
Yeah.
And I had two children.
Yeah.
Vivian, I had her first, and then Tony.
Yeah.
And there was only about a year and 10 months of difference in both of them.
Aye.
So they were very, very close growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Fought the bit out, as they do.
As brother and sister do, yep.
And I think they got closer together when they came into their teens, sort of.
You know,
the wee chat all started and whatever. Tony went to the Long Tower Boys School.
Yeah.
And he was a mad footballer, absolutely crazy about football.
Yep.
I mean, he was kicking a football from when he was able to walk,
uh-huh.
basically. And Liverpool was his team.
Yeah.
So he, as he was growing up, that's all he wanted to do.
Yeah.
He wanted to be a professional footballer. But he was an all-round sports person.
Yeah.
You know, he was brilliant at snooker too as well. You know, he was beating everybody that you could think of. And he did play a couple of games down the Strand with professionals, and he beat them.
Aye.
So he was always that way inclined that he just loved doing different things, you know.
And just ambitious,
He loved it. He was all right at school. I mean, he wasn't a genius or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sport would have been more
his talent,
Even in the primary school, he played in the teams and I had to do the women took the responsibility of washing the rigs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Them days. And he played for Trojans and all, you know, different teams.
Oh, very good, yeah.
All
that's Berkey's team, aye.
So he played for all of them. And he would have been very, very close to myself when he was a child. It was like sticking to your strings.
Just a mammy's boy, yeah.
I always remember my father saying, Jesus, you need to cut them strings with that wee boy there, because he would always be going behind you, and you know, and he would just squealed, you know, he couldn't leave him with anybody because he wanted to go everywhere with me.
Yeah.
He was a quiet young fella too as well,
mm-hmm.
and he just loved life, he loved animals,
mm-hmm.
he loved children.
Yeah.
You know, he did anything at all, he was so gentle.
Yeah.
And we moved up here to Hatmore when he was 9, I think.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing then, because, you know, moving children at that age, they're moving away from their friends and all.
Yeah.
And my two wains hated me for doing it, like, but, mm-hmm. you know, it was for the benefit of them too as well. Tony was a really loving young fella.
Yeah.
So around 15, 16.
Yeah.
We as I say, we were living up here in Hatmore, and somebody came over and told me that Tony was smoking dope over in the lane.
Okay.
And he was along with his good friends. So I went over to his friend's mother, who lives over the street, and told her. So we went over and got him. And I think that one joined between them all.
Okay, yeah.
So they were brought in. I was telling you this. And
yeah.
They were brought in here, and we took his friend into the front room, and the other two took Tony in here and interrogated them.
Yeah.
So, of course, they got their punishment and everything else, and they were grounded, and you name it, we did it. And just sort of keeping an eye on them.
Yeah.
And basically, I started then looking at what the hell is cannabis anyway, you know, because I knew nothing about drugs either.
Yeah.
And I started cutting things out of the paper and looking at the news and the radio and stuff like that. And I used to cut things out if I seen anything and leave it up in his bed, you know, about how dangerous it was. But he would just tear it up or roll it up and throw it under the bucket and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I always knew he read it because I always knew that he'd opened it up again and whatever.
Yeah.
And of course they promise you, I'm never going to do that again.
Yeah.
And as I always say, as a mother, you can't follow them.
No.
You can't. You don't know what they're doing 24/7.
No.
So it got to the stage where he was leaving school and he was going into the tech and he was going in to do a sport and reconciliation, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was happy enough, like he was going to school and just checking on him every day and whatever. And then things started to just be a wee bit stranger with him. And I thought, right, you know, what the hell's wrong? And he was out at the YMCA.
Mm-hmm.
He went out there to do some stuff and I had left him off. And I saw a boy that I know who was big into the drugs.
Okay.
Driving past me.
Mm-hmm.
And went down there. So I just turned and went back up again. And sure enough, my Tony was standing talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like a mad woman, obviously, and shouting and roaring and doing what I did. But he just says, no, he was just coming in there to do a job, something like that. But I didn't believe it.
No, you had that kind of gut instinct, yeah.
I just knew, yeah, there was something up. So again, that sort of kept me wide awake at, you know, looking and watching him when he came in and what was his eyes like, what was his mood like, all that there, carry on. And then it started off that he started missing school, missing the tech. And I don't know exactly where he would have went there or whatever, but I know that I got a letter in to say that he wasn't at the tech, say, for so many weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you do the thing where we all at there. So Vivian was down in Dublin.
Yep.
She was down at the Gaiety down there. She got a scholarship down there. And so Tony started going down to Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
And our Vivian would phone me and say, Mammy, you know, he's disappearing and he's coming in and he's a different kind of attitude and all this here, carry on, she said. And he's going over to bad areas. And when I came back off from Dublin, I had challenged him again about it. And he says, she's always fretting and all this here, carry on.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yeah.
He was going over to a place where they deal and do all the
lot drugs
and stuff
yeah.
like that there. So the next thing was he started getting in a bit of trouble with the police too as well. Nothing major.
No.
It was never ever done for drugs, but it was maybe just there was a police car over there, for example, one day, and they were all over and he started pulling at the one does in the door, so they arrested him. Just,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Many things like that there.
Yeah.
So he was in the house anyway, and he actually took sick one day, and I says to him, you know, Tony, I'm going up to your granny's now, and anybody calls, just tell him that you're not in.
Yeah.
So this boy called for him, and I knew like who he was and all, and I says, no, he's sick up in his bed. He's not going out. And Tony shouted down to me, Mammy, look, go and just let him in. He only wants to talk to me. So when I came back, our Tony was away. The next day, I was looking everywhere, and we spent the whole day looking and that night looking, and he came back up from Dublin. There's two stories to this, so I'll just tell you this one first.
Yep.
He came back up and he went down to the toilet. It was in a wild way, and he went down to the bathroom, and I went up the stairs to check on him to see, and he had flushed this letter down the toilet, and it didn't go, so I lifted it up, and all I could see was Mr. O'Reilly has, Tony had changed his name, has, he was admitted to the hospital with an overdose of heroin.
Right.
So all I seen was heroin, and I went really, really crazy, and shaking, and you name it.
Of course, it's your son.
He's going to die. So I phoned Desi to come down from work, and Desi came down, and we went up the stairs to him, sat down with him, and begged him to tell us, well, get you help now, you know. So then he said he wasn't taking it, but lies. But people have an addiction.
Yeah.
They're great liars.
Yeah.
They are great liars, and they'll cover up everything.
Yeah.
So the next day we phoned the doctors, and I got him an appointment and took him down. And he went down to the doctors, and the doctors gave him temazepam.
Right, okay.
So I come up the house, and he took a whole lot. I think he gave him 9. So he took a whole 9 temazepam, and he was off his head again.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, given somebody that, I don't know if he went down and told the doctor what he had been taking.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he wanted to get down to the doctors to get something else when he woke up that evening. And I had begged him not to go. I says, well, I'll take you down, but they'll not give you any more. So he went down in a rage, and he actually broke one of the windows and the doctors.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't see him.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't blame him.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't blaming him. So Tony was put off the list, our doctors, and he had to get another one. So this went on anyway, and then it would stop for about 3 months. And then he would be back on it again.
Right.
And he promised me it wasn't heroin, but it was class A drugs, like coke, stuff like that. So we made him up a gym out in the garage, you know, like he had his ball and he had his weights and all that there. So he went out there when he wasn't using.
I just try to keep his mind occupied.
He really, really trained hard.
Yeah.
And he would run for about 10 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it. When he wasn't using, he was really fit.
Yeah.
But when he was using, you know, it was a different story.
Yeah.
So, of course, you're talking to him about his career and his football and all, and he promises you, I'm never going to do it again, honest to God, I'm not. But, you know, you just love that in your head and think, ah, he is going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And when the months passed, you sort of start feeling a wee bit better and saying, well, maybe he is now, maybe he's past 3 months. That's brilliant.
You love and the hope.
You do. You really do love.
Aye. Because you have to too as well, I suppose, you know.
Aye. But I used to follow him a whole lot of places he went to.
Yeah.
I really did. Find out where he was going. And, I felt bad about it. But then I says, no, you know what? He's my son, and I want him to be alive when he's at the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
And my wee friend would have been driving me in the car. We would have... But he caught us a whole lot of times. Like, he did catch us, so we would just... Mammy, you're totally mad, do you know that? I know I am totally mad. But saying that there, he would have met up with friends, but he wasn't actually using.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, if he's meeting up with somebody, maybe he's going to go and get some drugs or something like that there.
Yeah.
So, again, the next time it happened was he had gone down to Dublin again.
Okay.
Me and him fought a lot because of the situation with the drugs.
Yeah.
I have to say this, and I know a lot of people, when it happens to them and they've got children in the house and they steal.
Yeah.
He never took a penny. Never stole anything from me.
Yeah.
I bought him all his clothes and anything he needed. And he would have sold them. He would have sold, you know, maybe in a pair of Nike or something like that.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have stole from me because... I could have left money sitting in the sideboard and I would have been still there in the morning.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thank God because I have heard so many people saying they're robbing me left, right and centre. And I sort of say, well, thank God he didn't do it. He didn't take anything from me. He had that respect.
Yep.
A funny story was one day we went up to see my daddy. My daddy was well sick.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony and my daddy were wild, wild close.
Yeah.
Wild close. And he was the firstborn from all the sisters.
Yeah.
My daddy would have let him in with his budgies and, you know, my daddy taught him a wee lot of things, you know, with screwing on a knob or something like that.
Yeah.
But my daddy, tablets were sitting up in the fridge,
mm-hmm.
and they were actually diazepam.
Okay.
And our Tony was over and he left at them. And I stood looking at him and I says, see if you dare take them, Tony. I would never do that, my granda.
Mm.
I'm only looking at them. And I went, put them down now. And, you know, we put them down. But mm-hmm. I went out of the room and I came back again and I said, are they still there, Tony?
Yeah.
Mammy, I told you I wouldn't do that, my granda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of young guy I was. Yeah. Like, if it had been bad enough, he could have stolen them and put them in his pocket. But he went down to Dublin anyway, and for that full day and night, we searched for him because he would always phone me.
Yeah.
He would always let me know where he was.
Yeah.
Because I always said, look, Tony, I don't care. Just phone me and tell me you're okay.
Yeah.
Please, yeah. don't be letting me worry or staying up all night. So no sign of him.
Mm-hmm.
And Vivian was out looking for him. Desi was out looking for him. We went to everybody we could think of. And the next day, there was a knock on the door. And I opened the door and it was two detectives.
Okay.
And they said, have you got a son called Tony? And I went, I do. And I said, is he dead? Just like that. And they went, no, but he's in intensive care.
Okay.
Could you show us a photo of him? I got the photograph and they said, aye, that was him. The reason why they couldn't recognise him was it was coming home along me a so-called friend.
Okay.
And he threw him out of the car at the top of the hill at Rosemount. And he was flatline. And it was the neighbours of Rosemount saw this happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they phoned an ambulance. And he was flatline again when the ambulance came. So they brought him round. And when he got him into the hospital, they didn't know what he was allergic to or anything because they didn't have details on him.
Of him, yeah.
And there was a nurse or a doctor called Tony,
mm-hmm.
and every time his name was mentioned, he would move.
Yeah.
So they thought, right, this young fella's name's Tony. So I don't know how they got my address and stuff like that. Probably when Tony was in trouble.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we went down and he was lying in the bed and he had tubes coming out of him everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they took us into the room and they said that somebody had phoned in and said that his name was Mickey from Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the boy that threw him out of the car. And they told me that he was actually going to be brain damaged if he comes through. Because whenever he went flatline, that he had lost, you know, so much
oxygen.
So we sat by his bedside for days and days and days. And he did come round. And it wasn't brain damage, thank God, but he had pneumonia. So he was in hospital for another 3 weeks because he was really, really ill. And the next thing was then he got out and we had told him what happened. And he nearly went crazy and he wanted to go and do whatever to this boy. But we actually stopped him. And we said, well, that's the kind of people, Tony, that you're associating with.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't care that you had overdosed. He had overdosed in methadone.
Mm-hmm.
He had drunk a bottle of it. So he had overdosed in that. And he went, I know. So again, he was clean. Vivian had moved up to Greencastle. So he went down there to stay with her for a while. And just for the fresh air and stuff.
Mm.
And he was doing really, really well. And he came back up to the house and he was again training. And it really did my heart good to see him getting back into it again, you know, when he was running. He couldn't run very far, but he was doing wee runs.
Yeah.
Because he was still that way.
Mm-hmm.
So over 3 months passed and he was saying to me, Mammy, do you think I could, what was it he said? Do you think I could go down to Dublin and sing in the pubs and earn money, you know, they do a scholarship? And I went,
was he a good singer, was he?
No!
Or
useless. His sister is.
Aye.
She was in drama and stuff like that.
Yeah.
No, he was absolutely useless.
Aye.
But when he was down in Dublin, our Gavin used to phone me and she said, "Mammy, he's out there kicking a ball and people are throwing money under the hat, you know, because he was doing all these tricks."
Mm-hmm.
So that's how good he was, like, you know, with the ball. Well, and stuff,
yeah,
like
the skill, yeah.
So we had a... He wanted to move out and he got a wee flat over in the water side, but he never ever loved on it.
Yeah.
Never loved on it. He went down there, I think, maybe the odd night if he had a gear with him or
yeah.
if he took something, but hopefully I thought, no, he's not even using. But to my surprise, then one night again, didn't appear.
Okay.
And again, we were out looking for him and it was the Friday and it was the day that we found him and I just had this feeling. As a muller.
Yeah, okay.
He's dead. I know he's dead and I kept saying it to Nina. Nina says, "Siri, no, he's not." I says, yes. He hasn't phoned me. No contact. I went over to the house where the other fella lived in the muller and she said, "They're big men, they can look after themselves, sort of, you know, I don't know where they are." But then I found him and he told me that he got off at the bridge, he had taken a hit and he wasn't coming home, made on him. So he went on up to the flat and we went over to the water side.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went up to the house of the people that owned it.
Okay.
And they were going on their holidays. So we came back down again and the boy down the stairs, I said, "Did you see Tony?" And he said, "Aye, he was in a wild bad way." And I said, "Do you know if he's in or out?" He says, "Well, I seen him going out, but he came back in again." So we went up the stairs and the fella came up along us and I said to Desi, "Go and just break a door down, we can get it fixed." And the wee flat was in darkness.
Okay.
And they broke the door down and then Desi came out and grabbed a hold of me and I pushed past him. And I went in and he was lying in a fetal position.
Okay.
On his boxers and he had put a needle under his ankle and it went straight under the artery. And he died from a massive heart attack. And because he wasn't using,
mm-hmm.
his body couldn't take that much. Because once you're clean, you have to be very careful then whenever you're using again.
Yeah.
You know, so his body couldn't take it. And it was just all hell let loose. I mean, I was screaming and shouting out at me and whatever. And within minutes, I think, the police were there. There was detectives there. There was...
And your life was just about to change forever.
My God. The policewoman, I know she was trying to pull me off him and I was pulling back down again. And then I still to this day don't remember bits and pieces, even how I got out of the house down the stairs and who came over. I know the priest came and it was a priest from Ballymacorte. And I know that my sister and brother-in-law was down there. And the next thing was, they took me home and I just says, "Go on phone now and see if he's okay, see if he's okay." Because I thought, they'll bring him back to life now whenever he gets over there. They can do anything. And they couldn't, I couldn't take it in that he had gone, that he had died.
Yeah.
And
but then suppose that was a trauma in itself too as well.
Big time,
Do you know, that was your kind of your fight or flight. That, I know our... situations are completely different, but I remember that impact of that trauma happening to you as well. Do you know them moments too? And do you know, you're like an outer body experience.
Do you know, I think that's the only way you can describe it, because you're not seeing people.
No.
You're not hearing people and you walk around in a daze and you're getting asked questions. Where will we put him?
Mm-hmm.
What, put him where? You know, I just could not get this under my head that, you know, that my Tony had died.
Yeah.
And then Desi said, "Siri, we have to go over and identify him." And I says, "Well, I'll do it. He's my son, I'll do it."
Mm-hmm.
"They don't want the coffin to be open." And I went, "Why?"
Mm-hmm.
And it was because he was lying in the one position.
Okay.
For, I don't know if it was 15 hours. He was lying there.
Okay.
So, of course, the blood goes, and then you're black on the one side of his fist. And I saw him and I couldn't see it. And I said, "No, the coffin's staying open." And they were all, "No, you can't. It's staying open.
Yeah.
You're not closing it."
Yeah.
I said, "Because you know what? There'll be young people and they see him. Mm-hmm. And they can just see him now the way he is." But I put makeup on him.
Yeah.
Just to make him look nice. And it was in that wee back room, and I just, there was that many people came into this house, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I think there was over 450 mass carts.
Yeah.
That I know this is wild, but I still have them.
Aye, of course. Yeah.
People usually burn them or something like that. Yeah. But they're still up the stairs. I don't sit and look at them, like, but no, you know, they're still there.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of children came with their brawlers, you know, people, Tony's friends and people, they brought their wee brawlers over. And
but you wanted that too as well, didn't you? And that's a very courageous thing to do too as well. They let them see what's, you know,
definitely
what the impact of it, you know.
And then Father McKenna was the priest in Craigan, and Father McKenna came down, and I says to Father McKenna, would you talk about him and just tell people how he died? And Father McKenna went, I don't know if I could do that. And I says, but I'm asking you.
Mm.
I says, I mean, people's coming in here and saying, did he die from a heart attack? And I went, no, he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I says, he died from an overdose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ashamed of him.
No.
I said, he had an addiction.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't help him with.
Yeah.
None of us could help him. We couldn't find help anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
When he went to his doctors, he turned him away. I said, he made a remark that if there was two people standing and somebody took a heart attack, he would get the ambulance for the heart attack and he would leave Tony there. I said, I made a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get nowhere. Yeah. And I says, but in the front of my Wayne's medical records was drug addict. I says, drug addict.
He's a human being at the end of the day.
I says, we're all addicted to something in our lives. And I said, and he couldn't help it.
Mm-hmm.
So far, McKenna, I think he had to actually go and ask the bishop, could he talk about him?
Okay.
And tell him what he died of.
Yeah.
And again, Rona, the chapel was, I don't know, I never seen a chapel as packed.
Yeah.
And he started talking about Tony dying. And you wouldn't have heard a pin drop.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that his mother had asked me to just to tell people what he died of, because she doesn't want rumours going around Derry.
No, no.
That he died from a heart attack. No. He died from a heart attack.
Yes.
But it was brought on by the drugs.
Yeah.
So I just says, no, just tell the truth.
Yeah.
Before I even got down to the house, there was a phone call from the papers. You know, that was a big story.
Yeah. But the thing is the fact that, you know, you never masked that.
No.
Do you know?
No, I didn't. And it was a big story. It was all over the Belfast Telegraph, the Mirror, everywhere. And the next thing was then, I was really in deep depression.
Mm-hmm.
I never in my life felt anything like it. I just, I couldn't breathe. I couldn't
mm-hmm.
sit about. I couldn't. I cried, continuously cried and cried and cried. And my family were brilliant and they were down every day. And do you know what? I didn't want anybody.
No.
I didn't want them here. I didn't want Desi here. I didn't want Vivian here. I just wanted Tony back.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that I could see, that just get him back for me. What do you want? I want Tony back again.
Yeah.
I went to the cemetery 3 times a day.
Okay.
Every day. I just couldn't leave it.
Yeah.
I just kept going up. His sister couldn't go. She's different. She still can't go.
Yeah.
She goes up when it's his anniversary, his birthday. And she leaves in flowers. But she says, Mammy, I know he's not there.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, you know what? I need to be up near him. Mm-hmm. I need to see his wee fist on there.
Yeah.
And
suppose that was your coping mechanism too, as well.
That's the only thing I could do. Yeah. And I remember my sisters buying me a wee lawnmower. And then they says, you're going to need a hoover. Because all I'd done was got my shite in and do everything. I said, people are going to think I'm totally crazy, lost the plot.
But you were in the depths of your grief then.
I really was. I couldn't go out of the house. That's how much it affected me.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister, she worked down at Grinchia and she ended up getting me a counsellor.
Okay.
And he was over in the waterside. And I says, Jesus, I don't know if I could go over there. Everything started to irritate me.
Was it because you were triggered?
Aye.
Yep.
I couldn't go up that street where Tony was.
Yeah.
I couldn't go up it for years
because
it just brought everything back to me.
I get that. That was, I remember too as well, Adam actually, he was, long story short, anyway, he fell when we were in Roe Valley Park one day and he slipped and I banged my hand off a rock. This is about, say, less than a year when before, no, about 8 months after Berkey passed, and I had a go up and get my hand x-rayed. It was a wee small break in it. But I remember walking through them doors back through A&E, through Resus again. And I was the same too as well. My heart was racing. And the minute then that triggers, and I know I get that 100%.
It really does.
Once that trauma plays back in you, it's tough.
It's wild.
Yeah.
I was that bad that I used to, in the middle of the night, get in the car and drive down to Liss Fannin.
Yeah.
And sit and look at the water and think, right, you know what? I could just end all this today and stop all the misery, because I know that it was misery in this house. Mm-hmm. I know it. And I wasn't getting any better, and I don't know how they stuck me, to be quite honest with you. And I used to hear Vivian saying, is my mammy going to ever be better?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this would have been maybe months and months later.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a load of tablets. And, of course, everybody was here. And the doctor came up and told Desi not to be letting me handle tablets. It made me worse. And I just thought, you know what, I just want to die. I don't mm-hmm. want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I just missed him so much. Yeah. But I forgot I had another daughter. I had a daughter who needed me too as well. Yeah. And she was hurting and Desi was hurting. But for grief to take that much from me,
mm-hmm.
it's just unbelievable. You know, it's unbelievable. And I can understand when people are in the depths of depression and grief, what they're actually going through. And yeah. so do you probably.
Yeah, 100%. It's a complete love experience here, yeah.
But I got the most amazing counsellor. I couldn't sit in his office. I had to get up after 5 minutes. So he said he would come out to the house.
And how long was this after Tony passed?
It was about 4 months.
Okay.
It was after I took all the tablets.
Yeah.
And he came out here to the house, and he stayed with me for 2 years. And I only found out that he wasn't paid the earlier. He was only paid for a year. So I got a full year.
Okay. You know,
and he was paid by whatever.
Yeah.
But he used to take me out in the car up to the cemetery. And a good day, me and him would sit and chat away to Tony. And, you know, it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second year, he started saying to me, you know, Siri, I think that you should do something.
Mm-hmm.
And you should start up a wee group. And I could never do that, like, not in a million years.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't know anything about addiction. And he went, well, you could start learning, like everything else. You know, just read books, watch TV, whatever. So he went and filled in a form for McGee. There was an addiction course on, and brought it down to me for me to sign it.
Yeah.
And I went, I'm not going to it. And he went, aye, you are. You're going to it. So that was sort of the start of it.
The first steps, yeah.
But I have to say, whenever I went in that class and they started talking about heroin, I ran out.
Okay.
I just, my stomach turned.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, here we go again. You know, my heart was palpitations, and I went, I can't do this, I can't do it. But I said, you know what? Alex is right. I really need to do something.
Yeah.
Because there was more children now abusing drugs. And I knew it.
Yeah.
So I went, right, okay, did it. And that was the start then of Hurt starting up.
Okay.
My couple of my friends went around the town with me looking to see if we could get a wee place. But believe it or not, everybody turned me away.
Okay.
I have to say that. Because they thought I was going to be bringing drug addicts to the door.
Right.
And, all right, I can see now it was fear, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And when they heard my story of Tony dying from heroin, they probably went, oh, Jesus, no, we don't want any of that on here. So I got a wee place, it was a wee dungeon place, and that's where I started off. And I had a lot of help from Desi's sister, who worked in the women's group, and she took me to different people to help me fill in forms.
Mm-hmm.
So the forms, I got my first funding from a woman, Victoria Holmes, who had lost her son.
Okay, right.
And she sent me a cheque for £2,000, and that was like a million. I thought, a million?
Yeah.
You know, this is going to get me somewhere else now.
Yeah.
So I just went up the ladder and did a different wee place.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you start meeting other people, and I met the Ballymena people who were really, really good to me.
Mm-hmm.
They all had children who were addicts, but they never lost anybody.
Okay.
So they basically took me under their wing, and I went up there and learned acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me great advice, and they would come down to see me, and how they run the place and stuff like that. So I got went up to Clarton Street, and I said to Desi, I'm going to get this belt. And they said, you have no money. And I said, I know I have no money, but I'm going to get it anyway. Because I just had that in me mind.
You just were so ambitious for it.
There was people coming to see it.
Yeah.
And there was wee young fellas coming. And I thought, no, I have to do more.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up, I said to Desi, I'll get the money somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I was putting in for applications. We never get any money from the government, ever.
No.
So I got the money. Yeah. I got it from the big lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, right, here we go, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to employ a couple of people.
Amazing.
And it started growing from there. And then I always have this wish board. And if I'm looking for something, I put a cheque up for £1 million. And I thought, I need £1 million to keep this place going.
Okay.
That sounded like £1 million.
Yeah.
I ended up getting 500,000.
Amazing.
And then I got another 500,000 a couple of weeks later.
Oh my God.
So I was able to get counsellors and stuff like that there. And we only had half the building, but the other ones, they were doing like technology and stuff. And I went up and asked them, would you move? Like, if, you know, because I'm going to need more space.
Space here.
And they did. They got a wee place and I had the whole building in. So I just had treatment rooms.
Yeah.
I was able to do the acupuncture. I was trained as an acupuncturist. So my volunteers that came in, I trained them. And so they were able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We got people started coming in and offering therapies. The counselling was the big one.
Yeah.
But it was really, really tough going, because you were constantly putting in application forms and going to meet people and stuff like that. You know, when the money was nearly running out, there was a couple of times I thought, you know, I'm going to have to close.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Our Tony always came up for me.
Yeah,
always came up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, right, I know it's in that building, because everybody tells me it's haunted. It really is. I says, it's haunted with Tony.
Yeah.
He's there looking after everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was years and years before I could stop sort of thinking, right, I'm not going to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always thought, I am going to see him again.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, Brona, but...
Yeah.
You know the way they say that there's a double everywhere?
Yeah.
It was a couple of years before I went over into Tesco's, and I seen this fella, and I swear to God, it was my Tony's double.
Mm-hmm.
And even the way he walked, and I dropped my basket, and I just fell to the ground. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, Jesus Christ, that is him. He's not dead at all. And this was in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were coming over, and you're right. He was like, no, I'm all right. I knew. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
But it's things that...
Yeah.
I went to mediums.
I remember you telling me this, addicted
to mediums. I had any medium in this town, and then they were no good. So I went to Scotland, I went to England, I went to London, and I went to America.
Just to get answers? Just to
get mediums. For somebody to tell me, you know what, I have a message from him,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's all I wanted to hear. There was only one, and it was in Scotland, and it was... I know it was Tony that he was talking about, because he described his dog. He was mad about slippers. He went to America, to Florida, with me and Desi. His granda, whenever his granda died, then that was the only peace that you got, and that was because my father was really close to him.
Yeah.
And he was close to my daddy.
Mm-hmm.
My daddy died 2 years later. And I just knew then that, you know, right, my dad is going to look after him.
Yeah.
But I still go to mediums. I still go to one. I'm looking to go to the Long Island medium. I don't know if you ever heard of her. And
Aye.
You watch her?
I do watch her, actually.
I was just watching her last night.
Do you know, I be on and out of mediums. You know, sometimes I think to myself, do you know, is it all real? Is it, you know, or then other times I think, no, you know, there's certain things that they would say that, you know, nobody else would know. Do you know, it's a tough one, to be honest with you.
She's fantastic, because she goes out into the street, and maybe she's at a shopping centre, and she would go to somebody.
Yeah.
And talk to them about the person who's dead and tell them things.
Yeah.
She's really, really funny too as well.
Yeah.
But I go on her site and I send her a message. Yeah. No, I don't send her one, I send her 10, 20.
Aye.
And I've been on her site for about 3 years, and they say it's over 3 years that she might answer you.
Yeah.
But my wee niece was away in Long Island there last night. I gave her letters to post.
Aye.
So nuttiness is still there. But I think that hurt now, as it stands, we have helped so many people, and it was all for Tony.
Mm-hmm.
But at the start, there used to be young fellas coming in there, wee girls even, and saying, I knew your toe. That was his nickname. Mm-hmm. I never called him that.
No.
But, and they would tell me stories about him. And I would say, don't tell me any bad ones. Don't I know any bad ones?
Yeah.
But, you know, they would say, no, it was a great fella. And there was a couple of boys came on with him. And they were like, I used to play snooker with him. He says, you couldn't beat him.
Yeah.
But it was nice stuff. It was always nice. Like, I know Nike. Tony did things like...
Yeah.
When you're an addict, you're going to do whatever it is you have to do. And I'm not sitting here saying anyway that he was a saint. He wasn't. But it was nice to hear people be genuine.
Yeah, aye.
And even to this day, some people would say, you know what, he was a gentleman.
Yeah.
And we got on great with him. Mm-hmm. And Tony was the type of person, he would have talked to Nick a devil.
Yeah.
He was just so friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And that came out on him.
Yeah.
And I go, you know what, I know that he is helping me. And I know that he was helping me. And I know it was him and Alex that just brought me through this. People might think I'm crazy.
Mm.
But I do believe in the afterlife. I have to.
Yeah, of course.
I am going to see him again.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to see him again. Yeah. And
I think we all hold on to that type of hope too as well. And especially when you've lost a loved one and someone very, very close to you too as well. You have to clutch on to that hope to think, do you know what, I am going to see that person or persons again. Do you know? Definitely.
Because I lost my daddy 2 years, and then I lost my sister, who was only 37.
Yeah.
Not long after that. And then I lost another sister who was only 56.
And the space of all them years,
A space of 5 years, which was horrific.
Yeah.
You know, and that grief, like, goes on. The grief that I had with Tony was something that I could never describe, probably, you know, Bruno.
100%.
But the other grief, you do your grieving and you sort of come through it. But for the loss of a child, I don't think you ever.
Mm-hmm.
I changed so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Desi would always say, like, you know, where's the city that I knew?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where she is.
No.
You know,
part
gone.
Of you. Yeah.
I became a completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I wanted to enjoy myself again ever.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to smile, didn't want to laugh.
Yeah.
I thought, how can I do that? If, you know, I've lost my way. And does anybody understand what that's like? You know, the anger then gets to you. But grief is just something, it's a pain that you can't describe it.
No, you can't. You can't describe it.
You can't describe that pain because it seems invisible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's doing everything it can to you.
And do you find that, you know, would you get a sense of comfort too as well, speaking to all her families coming through with her too as well throughout the years?
I would say it would
give you a great sense of comfort too as well. They know that, you know, you're not alone too as well.
And he's all over the office.
Yeah.
His foot is up. There's one of the council rooms named after him. And another council room's named after a girl who was at our committee. She was a lovely person.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd just name them after them.
Yeah.
Which makes it real.
Yeah.
But everybody on there knows Tony's story, and they talk about him as if he's still alive sometimes, you know. But they all recognise that Tony as the person that really started hurt, because if Tony hadn't died, I would have never started hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a classroom assistant,
disabilities,
and I loved my job, and I would have never ever left it.
Mm-hmm.
I worked down in Belmont,
and
I just loved working with them weans, you know, I just loved it.
Yeah.
And Tony died while I was in Belmont.
Yeah.
And so Tony has hurt to me.
Yeah.
And he'll keep that memory going.
100%.
And everybody that comes in, and we don't help everybody. Some people are beyond it sometimes, but we do our best to help 90% of them to get through that addiction.
Definitely. And it's probably because of your, you know, your loved experience too as well, where you can lean on that person, say, you know, if a family member was going through addiction with as drugs and alcohol too as well.
Both,
that you could lean on to say, do you know, I understand how you feel, and that probably gives them a sense of comfort too as well.
Definitely, because there's still a big stigma with drugs, even though our town is just rolling with, rotten with.
Do you think it's evolved more now?
Oh, dear God, we're on a big time.
Yeah.
I really worry about our generation now that's coming up.
Okay.
Because, you know what, they're getting younger. And the youngest person that Wayne Ann hurt was only 11. And they were smoking dope.
Right.
And that's how it starts. Like, yeah. I do believe that it's a gateway drug.
Uh-huh.
Because that's where Tony started.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of children that have started smoking dope.
And then goes
and
on
to... And still another 3 years' time. And they are messed up.
Yeah.
Paranoid, you name it, everything. And they can't come off it because they need it. And then they start drinking alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But there's as much coke in this town over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Wayne's anymore. It's 30, late 30s, 40s, going to parties, having coke parties.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been quite a few people who've died from coke.
Yeah.
Even though people say you can't, they have.
Mm-hmm.
But when they start on the coke then, they need an up. They need to be brought up again. So they start taking... medication, prescription drugs is massive in this town. Massive. And heroin's in this town, big time.
Yeah.
But that's always covered up.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know. Because any drug can kill you.
100%, I mean,
an ecstasy could kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, we have heard of Leah Bates, who, whenever I started up that, I think that's when she died.
Yeah.
And that was only one tablet.
Mm-hmm.
There, people have died from pregabalin, all the prescription drugs that's been given in this town.
Yeah.
And they're sold very easy and they're bought for half and all.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking maybe 20 of them a day maybe.
Yeah.
You know, so there's people walk through our door that's on everything. Like,
yeah.
You name it, everything. Yeah. I think the only thing, crack cocaine. But you know what? That'll be next.
Yeah.
You know, because there's everything else here.
Yeah.
And once it's... in America or anywhere else, it sort of comes over here.
Yeah.
You know, then it with the travelling and stuff. But I really do fear for the young people.
Mm-hmm.
I fear for the young people in this town. And the other ones, you know, when they're up in their 20s and they want to party and they're partying hard. And then they find themselves then, they've lost their jobs. They're out on their own. They're living in the streets. All that carry on's going on too as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sad.
Yeah. And really, I think it's on our own hometown too as well. So do you know, sad. So much, like, you know.
There's so many young people now that are homeless.
Yeah.
And they're living in, you know, they're in these houses now where there's maybe 5, 6 of them all together. And there's so many young children now that have different things wrong with them.
Yeah.
Medically.
Yeah.
And there's so many young women that are still using drugs that are pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And don't realise the dangers. Like even smoking's dangerous and alcohol's dangerous. So, you know, we're seeing all that. I suppose
that's the best thing that you can do is just to kind of support and guide them to you as well, as best as you can.
We can. Yeah. Everything in Hurt is free.
Yeah.
We give them 8 to 10 sessions of counselling.
Okay.
But you see, if they need any more, then they get it. We don't just let them go then. They get... the acupuncture too as well, and then we give them out the wee needles and they're posted out to them before we even see them, so that they can get the wee needles under their ears. That's the acupuncture needles, and that helps just to relax you a wee bit. Acupuncture is fantastic. Doesn't work for everybody, but it has been around for millions of years.
Mm-hmm.
And Chinese, Japanese, they use it all the time for even operations and stuff. I mean, I used it myself.
Yourself,
even before I started Hurt.
Yeah.
Because I used to go for my back and that.
Yeah.
So acupuncture has been proven. They work.
Great benefits from it,
And it's great for even children with ADHD.
ADHD,
For that. And acupuncture is for everything in your body. It helps calm you.
Yeah.
It helps with your addiction. And it's done in the ear.
Yeah.
And it's really brilliant, and you know, people should use it more too as well.
And you have educational programs too as well.
We started. I always wanted to do that. I started it up years ago.
Yeah.
And we went into the primary schools, And then we couldn't get any funding for it, but we got funding there 2 years ago. So we're in most of the primary schools now doing it, a great wee programme. Yeah. And it's called The Wizard of Me.
Yeah.
We go into the secondary schools too as well, the first, second years, which I think is really, really important.
Oh, definitely, especially
because,
at age.
Especially the transition from primary school to secondary school. That's massive to the young ones. And because, you know, they're learning more.
Yeah.
And they're getting on with bigger friends and stuff like that. And they're learning a lot more about maybe even dope just or whatever, or alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But I think education, a lot of people say it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we get them at a very, very early age, I'm talking maybe 5 and 6.
Yeah.
Because they actually do that in Canada and America and play schools.
Yeah.
And they bring it into their curriculum. And they're not talking about heroin to them or anything like that, but they're talking about medication and doing it in a fun way.
Yeah.
You know, you're not allowed this.
Yeah.
So that's the way that it should be.
Yeah, going forward.
And that's
yeah.
the way we started in the primary schools,
mm-hmm.
and doing wee games with them and stuff, and making sure that they know to say no.
Yeah.
And the primary schools, they're really funny, like some of the ones, and mm-hmm. some of them are out there, and some of them know it.
Yeah.
And can I tell you one wee story just?
Aye, go ahead, yeah.
So we were in the primary school over the Manor side, and I had got them to draw what they thought was a drug dealer.
Okay.
So we gave them out a page, and they were drawing away and whatever, and we were going around looking, and some of them had monsters and whatever. But this wee one drew this girl beside a BMW, and she had a Gucci handbag. And so I thought, right, this is interesting. So we asked them all, right, let me see yours. Who do you think at it? And they were all just saying they would have bad teeth and, you know, and scraggy, and they don't wash themselves. But she stood up anyway, and she was, both her parents were doctors.
Okay.
So obviously they were talking to her, and she turned around and she said, well, my mommy and daddy told me that the drug dealers don't take drugs, but they sell them to children and all that, and then they've all this money to buy BMWs and Gucci bags.
Oh my God,
and
just
go,
showed you.
And go away to Spain. And, and she was just so matter of fact, and I just looked and thought, fair play to you.
Oh, brilliant.
But all the other ones were looking at her and going, no, they don't, you know.
And she was so clued on.
But that was the kind of thing, you know, you're learning them not to go, if anybody comes to the school, because some of the tablets could look like sweets.
Absolutely.
You know, and some children would just go ahead and,
and
do it.
Yeah, 100%. And they wouldn't know. Yeah.
The parents really need to be doing that too as well.
Oh, definitely. From such a younger age too.
Our parents need to be talking to their weans and telling them about drugs. I mean, there's enough on the internet. You can find out just wee things and come down to hurt and get leaflets and leave them lying about, I used to tell them.
Yeah.
You know, just leave them lying about and let them read them.
Yeah.
You don't have to be pressurising them or anything like that.
No, definitely. So they say even over the years too as well, how do you manage your grief now? Do you know throughout the, so how many years now has Tony passed?
21, over 21.
So over them years, do you know?
I still have depression.
Okay.
Which I'm not ashamed to say, I still take
antidepressants.
Antidepressants.
Yeah.
I still take antidepressants. I do get down.
Yeah.
Every now and again, you know, I don't know, it just comes over me, I just sit and cry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'd bring myself around again. I think hurt has really helped me.
Yeah.
Going into work and working with people and seeing people, that has really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whenever somebody sends you a lovely wee card and says, you know, you've really helped us, you've saved our life.
Yeah.
That sort of lifts your spirit
mm-hmm.
because you know you're doing something good.
Yeah.
But for me, Bruna, I don't know about you, but the depression
doesn't leave you.
It's
never
always
does.
There.
Yeah.
And that's what I always say to Desi, you know, I will be like this probably to the day I die.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help it.
No.
I wish I could. I wish I could say I'm this jolly person. I wish I was back to what I used to be, but it's not to be. I mean, life took a big turn for me.
Absolutely.
I used to say, ask why did Tony die, but for a reason. And then, you know, as I went to different courses and they say people die for a reason. I used to just go mad.
Yeah.
But I know, you know, I say Tony did die for a reason, because hurt would have never been born.
Yeah.
If Tony hadn't died.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't be helping the young people in this town that we're helping.
Yeah.
And the mammies and daddies that we're helping. And to me, with Tony dying, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hurt was born and then I started hurt.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's been keeping you going throughout them years.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
And, you know, you're 100% right. The side of depression with grief does leave you.
Doesn't,
do you know?
No.
And, you know, one thing could flare you up within seconds, but you have to get them emotions out. You know, you can't always just be. My problem is that I would be in air pilot mode for a long, long time, and then I'll hit a brick wall then. And then I not want to see anybody or anything like that. And it's just about coping and managing that, doesn't it, too, as well? And, you know, everybody's different with their own grief.
Definitely.
Do you know?
Definitely. I would go up to the cemetery still a lot, and I stand and talk to him.
Do you get a sense of comfort from that?
Do you know what I do?
You do, yeah.
Last year, on his birthday, RK, I went up along with me, and we, you really are going to think I'm crazy.
Not at all.
We took up his balloons, and I always leave a card at his birthday, at Christmas, whatever. And me and Kaya were standing saying happy birthday.
Yeah.
I looked around me and there was nobody there.
Yeah.
And me and her were saying happy birthday. And then the next thing I heard the clapping. And it was a man and woman behind me.
Oh,
and I went,
God.
Oh, Jesus. And I went, it's his birthday today. No, we know. But you know, that's the kind of things, you know, that we would do. And Arkea, my only granddaughter, very curious, always has been when she was away. And she used to tell me that, believe this or believe it not, that she was up in heaven with Tony.
Aye. Oh my God.
And that Tony sent her down here. This is one day she said this.
Unbelievable.
And I went to a psychologist, he worked with me, and I told him, and he says, so, you know, that's probably true.
Yeah.
She knew things, knew where his toys were. Well, he hadn't got any toys. His clothes were all still in the bag, but his ball.
Yeah.
And she was able to get into that built-in wardrobe and pull that out and pull out the ball.
Yeah.
And say, Nanny, there's his ball.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to her one day, Kaya, do you see whenever you go up to heaven in your dreams?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, eh. And I says, how do you get up? She says, a big wings. And I says, can I go up you? She says, no, Nanny, you've no wings.
Oh, God.
You know, see her, she was amazing. Like, I mean, that child, up until she was five.
Mm-hmm.
And the counsellor says, children, do you?
Yeah.
No, and, you know, today she said, believe every word she says.
Mm-hmm.
I could not believe her because she was coming out with stuff. She was born in America.
Yeah.
And she was making the bed with me, and I gave her the pillowcase to put on. And I says, can I put that on there now? And she was standing, here was she. She was only about three. Nanny, do you know this? She says, I chose to come to Derry. And I went, what? How do you know that word? Even chose? And here she, I've been Nanny done. And then she went on about her business.
Yeah. No, they are like Wayans. They literally are a breath of fresh air.
And I brought her down the stairs and I says, go and tell your granddad that. And Desi says, you turned out to say that. I said, I'm not. You know, and she used to just come out with different things all the time.
Yeah.
And mention Tony as if she knew him.
Yeah.
You know, and she says, Tony sent me down. I played with Toto. Toto, she called him.
Oh, God.
Like, how could she know that his nickname was Toto?
Yeah.
So, Kaya was just part of the saving too as well.
Yeah,
You know.
Sent for a reason.
Definitely. And she's white like him.
She's white like him.
Oh, jeepers, she's white like him.
Brilliant.
She has his eyes and there was wee things that she would have done. She would have done like him.
Aye.
But I always say to Vivian, our Tony would have been just crazy about her.
Yeah.
You know,
aye.
Crazy about her.
I know, I always say that too as well, but my twins, because my daddy never got to meet them, but I know it's just, they really are just, they give you such.
They do give you strength.
They do, especially in your darkest moments and your darkest days at times too as well. Definitely. Sadie, what advice would you have for any parent or even a loved one who feels that somebody they love is having a problem with addiction?
Do you know what? I think the best thing to do is speak about it.
Yeah.
To speak out, because some of us stay silent for too long and then it's too late. They could ring hurt at any time.
Mm-hmm.
our number's everywhere, and they could ask to speak to somebody. And if it's a mother or a father about a child, then we always say, look, if you can't force them if they're overage. You can't force them to come down or,
yeah.
you know, but if they need the help, we're there to help Alice yeah. too as well.
Yeah.
But if you don't sit in silence, don't do what I done and roar and squeal all the time. Yeah. That's one thing I learned because that doesn't work.
No.
You have to keep it calm.
Yeah.
And even sit them down and start talking to them in a nice calm voice.
Yeah.
Because if you go on, we all guns roaring, they're just going to walk out, don't you? They're yeah. never going to tell you.
Yeah.
And some children sometimes want to be found out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they look for the help.
Yeah.
But there is people where mothers have brought them to us and we saw them. They never come back again.
Yeah.
Because they were forced into it.
Yeah.
They have to want it.
Yeah, they want to help themselves.
They have to
yeah.
want to help themselves. Mm-hmm. And there's a few places around the town now, like there's, well, we're the only ones, I think, does the drugs and alcohol,
mm-hmm.
except for the Northlands.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, it's about talking.
Yeah, talking's the key.
You really have to talk.
100%.
Talk it over. And if you don't know anything about drugs, I always say, go on the internet, you'll get everything there.
Yeah.
Sometimes the internet can give you too much, but yeah. call into our office, we'll give you leaflets.
100%.
You know, and they can read up in the leaflets and
yeah.
take them home with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going away, Bruna.
No.
Drugs is definitely not going away in this town.
No, definitely
so
not.
I think people should be more aware
mm-hmm.
of the situation.
Yeah.
Especially when they have children.
Yeah, 100%.
And you know, we go out now, it's a corporate thing, and we go out and talk to different people that's married and men and women. And they're shocked at what they hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe their children have grown up, but they're still, Jesus, I didn't know that could happen to you or whatever. So it's good to be learning about it.
Yeah.
And it should be brought into the schools as part of the curriculum.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Siri, thank you so, so much. You know, just listen to your story and about Tony too as well. The testament that you're doing for him, the legacy you. That you're bringing on is just unbelievable. You're just remarkable and, you know, you're a powerful, powerful woman. Thank you so, so much, Siri. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruna. So are you.